It's only Tuesday. Still have sex with you.
Finance and revenue is open. We will start today with a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1529. This is technically our first public hearing since we had to do an informational hearing on the first day last week. So what I thought we would do is have a little sort of update from legislative revenue economists, hear from proponents and opponents in the Department of Revenue, and take some questions from the committee to both sides, and probably hold it right there and not take any action today in terms of votes. So let's start, Caitlin, if you could refresh us, yet also update us, taking us back to when this started. I believe it was 1989 when the phrase, interstate broadcasters was used and taken out of the corporate income tax.
Sure. So Chair House, members of the committee, that is correct. In 1989, a bill was put forth to try to deal with this industry specifically. So at the time, intangible services were sourced based on the cost of performance method, meaning that the sale or the cost, wherever the plurality of the cost to produce that service was located, that's where the sale would be sourced. And so over the summer, I went back and listened to some of the testimony from 1989, and there were concerns about stations close to the state border having sales or customers from Washington sourced to Oregon and vice versa. And so the solution at the time was to take this industry out of the general method of apportionment and apply the audience method of apportionment to the industry at the time. That obviously continued. In 2014, the legislature changed to this temporary method of commercial domicile. And that has continued through 2019. But in 2018, the state switched from cost of performance sourcing for intangibles to market-based sourcing for intangibles. And that sources sales to wherever the customer is located. And so that took place in 2018. For the broadcasters, they are still apportioned as kind of a one-off separate from that general apportionment method. And as of 2020, we are back to the audience method. And so kind of to tie this into the bill really briefly, if the bill does not pass, we stay with the audience method if nothing passes. If the dash one passes or the dash two passes, that would take us to the commercial domicile method. And then in the dash two, there's an option for apportioning platform broadcasting company receipts a little bit differently. And then the dash three just makes a change to the applicability date on the introduced version. And so the introduced version effectively would take market-based sourcing and apply it to the interstate broadcasters. So those are kind of the options before you today. I have been working on the revenue impact, and there are some data issues, which I can expand on if you'd like. But I think our best estimates right now, the introduced version, so going from the audience in 2020 to the introduced version would be a change to market-based sourcing for interstate broadcasters. One big difference between the audience method and market-based sourcing is that under market-based sourcing, different revenue streams would be apportioned differently according to the MTC rules. So under audience, that's not really the case because of the Comcast decision, which could be fact specific. But in the Comcast case, the Oregon Supreme Court ruled that all of the receipts of an interstate broadcaster, except tangible personal property and real property, would be apportioned using this ratio. If we switch to market-based sourcing, different revenue streams would be apportioned differently. So for example, market-based sourcing calls out revenue streams from web-based activities, for example, let's say like a search engine versus broadcasting activities versus cable activities. And so the rules are a little bit more detailed. So revenue impact for the introduced version, we really aren't able to separate out any of those revenue streams in the data that we have now. So that's probably going to be indeterminate. For some companies, it could be an increase. For some companies, it could be a loss or a decrease, and we're just not sure what the distribution is there. Then of the dash one and dash two, We are estimating about, and I'm still finalizing this, but about a $6 million decline relative to the audience method. So remember, the baseline for these estimates is the audience method of apportionment. And so switching to the 0.4% gross receipts kind of floor would result in $6 million less compared to the audience method. And so that's kind of where the revenue impact is now. I know that's a lot of information at once, so I'm happy to answer any questions if that would help.
Yeah, tell us what the change in 2018 in Oregon, what that landscape does to this category.
Okay, yes. So Chair Haas, members of the committee. So in 2018, we switched to market-based sourcing, which sources intangible sales or services to the location of the customer.
And that was done for every, that wasn't done with relevant to the Motion Picture Association, anybody, that was for everyone, all
right.
Corporate taxpayers.
Yes, Chair Haas, that's correct. So in general, in Oregon, the default for corporate taxpayers using intangibles is to source based on where the customer is located.
Okay, walk us through that a little bit more, because I don't think we had somebody wrong committee then.
Sure. So let's say that I am selling, I have a consulting business, and I provide, economic consulting to someone located in Oregon, but I live in Washington. That sale or the activity associated with my consulting business, because the customer is located in Oregon, would be sourced to Oregon. Whereas before, it would have been sourced based on where most of the cost associated with creating that product or service was located. So this is switching to wherever the customer is, that's where we're going to define your market. This comes up kind of related to the broadcasters in terms of what do you believe their market actually is. So if you believe the market is the direct customer of the broadcaster, then commercial domicile would tie broadcaster's direct customer, meaning an advertiser or a licensor. You would use market-based sourcing would kind of be similar to commercial domicile in that sense. If you consider if you consider the customer of the broadcaster to be based on their audience or their viewership in Oregon, then the audience method is a little bit more aligned with that. Now, the market-based sourcing rules, like I said, do deal with these revenue streams differently, but for network activity, they do use the audience method of apportionment.
Okay, so we're in a market-based landscape, mm-hmm. and the way it's relevant to this category of taxpayers is the way we would calculate how much the tax they pay is we just look at the audience.
Yes.
Okay, and the audience is defined as how do we get to audience?
Good question. So audience in general would be the viewership in Oregon relative to the viewership in the U.S., but there are some issues in measuring that. So for example, if I have there is a program that I'm not able to obtain viewership information for, then maybe that ratio isn't representative of who's actually watching this in Oregon. And so that might change. And what I mean by that might change is there can be some disagreement between industry and the department in calculating that ratio. Mm-hmm. And that comes up in some of the cases that you're familiar with as well. Often for networks, so if you think about traditional broadcasters like NBC, ABC, and Fox, and CBS, things that you can still get with an antenna, it's a little bit more of a gray area, because even without subscribing directly to a paid service, I could technically access that information. And so audience then is a little bit harder to tie down, or could be, from one perspective.
Okay. So if we were to use the base bill or switch to audience here, or how would the taxes from Netflix be calculated for their state of Oregon taxes?
Under the audience method?
Yes, with market-based.
Okay, so Chair Haas, with market-based sourcing under Netflix, the sales would be sourced to where the customer is located, and Netflix is kind of the most, I would say, I don't want to say easiest example, but kind of a simple example, because Netflix knows your billing address, right? So I have a Netflix account. They know where I live. They can source that sale to Oregon. So under market-based sourcing, it would be sourced that way.
Okay, and they take a percentage then of
yes.
their total audience?
Mm-hmm. So let's say that for Netflix, the percentage of Oregon subscribers relative to the U.S. is 2%, then Netflix would use 2% multiplied by their total income. That would be their apportionment factor.
Okay. And we always use US, we don't use global?
Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm. Now, so to kind of highlight the issues here, under market-based sourcing, if we go with a different example, so not Netflix, but something like NBC, or if we think of a traditional broadcaster. So I'll go with NBC, although I'm not sure if their shows are still on Netflix. But if we think about NBC, so I could watch NBC with an antenna. I could watch NBC. I don't think they have a direct subscriber platform out yet, but that's a potential in the future. I could also watch NBC shows that have previously aired on something like Netflix or Hulu. And so in this case, especially if you think about NBC shows via Hulu or Netflix. So if I'm watching, I think Frasier was NBC on Netflix, then does NBC have any tie to that audience? And so this is where kind of the crux of, I think, some of the disagreement shows up. Under market-based sourcing, the audience would matter for this type of network. But in the case of Netflix, because we know where the customer's located, it's simpler.
And complicating your example there is NBC is now Comcast.
Exactly. So. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that shows up a lot in the data and kind of in this whole discussion. So NBC and Comcast are, I think Comcast owns NBC or vice versa. Disney is linked with ABC, and so that can complicate things. And so a lot of these groups of taxpayers have revenue streams in many different areas.
Okay. If we had this market-based landscape back in 1989 when this carve-out was created, do you think there would have been as a compelling of a reason to do that special treatment for interstate broadcasters?
So, Charas, I don't think so. I think based on the testimony in 89, the reason for doing that was this concern over cost of performance inaccurately representing the activity of the business or the apportionment. And so if market-based sourcing had been in place the whole time, then I think that would have probably eliminated that concern.
Okay. Other questions of our economist here? Senator Finley.
I have a question. Thank you, Chair. What is the impact of the current litigation, and what is the status of the litigation on the outcomes?
So, Chair Haas, Senator Finley, I think a number of the cases are, I think all the cases are still ongoing. So the Comcast case was partially decided in 2018. Some of the issues have been remanded back to lower courts. When I looked at them most recently, I think DOJ and possibly the taxpayers as well have filed to move those cases out of abeyance, but a lot of them were put on hold when the Comcast decision was moving through the courts. My impression is that they are not close to all being finished. They're still ongoing.
Okay. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Haas. So I had similar questions because although I don't know exactly what's going to happen in the future, it seems that if we were to do nothing or we were to go ahead and pass the base bill with or without whatever amendments, it either way, I mean, not that I know if you have, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask your opinion on this, it just seems that there's going to be a legal case either way, unless someone can inform me otherwise, right? I mean, isn't there a possibility? I don't know if LC or, I don't know if I necessarily have to have that answered. It's just, I don't understand how it doesn't end up being contested in some way, or am I misunderstanding?
No, Senator Taylor, I don't think so. I'm not sure if, so I don't want to speak for the taxpayers or for DOR, but I think some of the issues, so stepping back to the cases, Nexus was a large issue, and I think you heard testimony from the MPA that they don't view that as an issue anymore. Another issue was the definition of who is a broadcaster, and that definition of one-way signal, which still remains in the dash one and the dash two. So if you were to go with one of those, that it was probably an area where litigation would continue. Additionally, that one-way definition, I think LRO's view is that it can pull in a lot of additional taxpayers because of that, the generality of that definition. And again, that was established in 1989. So there's a potential, I would say, for more audit activity through the department, because if their job is to enforce that definition, mm-hmm. and the definition includes any one-way signal, then that gets really broad. So I think that's potentially an area of additional litigation. But I think the primary, yeah, so the primary, I would say the three major issues, and this was identified in Chris's LRA report, I think in 2017, were nexus, which I think is has been dealt with, who is an interstate broadcaster, which still deals with that one-way definition, and then which receipts are subject to apportionment. And the Comcast decision, I think, dealt with that for Comcast. When I spoke with LC, Kate indicated that these cases are very taxpayer-specific. And so while it might seem like the Comcast decision applies to everyone, there could be litigation arguing that, okay, I'm a broadcaster, but these receipts shouldn't be apportioned this way. So I think there's a chance that that will continue. I would say during under market-based sourcing, the rules are very detailed. And so actually the issue I just described with Comcast likely goes away, because the market-based sourcing rules say, okay, your broadcasting income apportioned this way.
That's in the base bill.
Yes, okay. So the base bill and the dash three.
Mm-hmm. Follow up.
Senator.
And then if nothing happens, mm-hmm. doesn't that upset somebody in the universe and want to file a suit in some way? That's a really general question. But
Chair Haas, Senator Taylor, I could see that possibility, yes. So if nothing passes, we're back to the audience method, and we still have that one-way definition, and we still have all the receipts potentially counting.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk to Melissa and John from the Motion Pictures Association. Do you have your letter from the other day in here? So,
I don't know. I guess I just
want to.
Thank you very much, Melissa Patak, for the Motion Picture Association. Appreciate your time. A couple of things that I wanted to address with you. Number one, who are we and who do we represent? So I think it's known, but just to go over it, you know, officially again, Disney, the Walt Disney Company, and as Kate has said, that generally includes ABC and many of their cable networks. You'll know them as ESPN and Freeform and many others. They also have a direct-to-consumer service now called Disney Plus. CBS Viacom, another of our companies, they used to be two companies, but as of last year, they have merged. And CBS obviously speaks for itself. CBS, also Showtime is part of that family. And then Viacom has a series of cable networks. You'll recognize them from MTV, Comedy Central, Nickelodeon, et cetera. NBC Universal, which is owned by Comcast, formerly owned by General Electric, owned by Comcast. They are also a member, and we speak for them. And Warner Media, which used to be part of the Time Warner family, and about a year and a half or so now owned by AT&T, and they are part of this group. All of our companies support the Dash 2 Amendment. I want to be clear and unequivocal and unambiguous. There were some rumors that maybe someone didn't support the Dash 2, but all of those companies support the Dash 2. I was in touch with the director of tax last week by email clarifying that. I know they have representation here in the Capitol, and so I just want to make sure that that is abundantly clear to everybody. The Dash 3 goes back to audience. Any way you slice it, it goes back to audience. And with that, as Senator Taylor has aptly pointed out, all of the controversies, with the exception of Nexus, that litigation and those audits are still in process. I understand market sourcing, which, you know, we appreciate the move to and shift to market sourcing in 2018. The MTC has made a recommendation to the country that for broadcasters, that means audience. as you know, we disagree with that. In 11 states that are members of the MTC, like Oregon, they've rejected it and they've gone to commercial domicile. Again, when your NBC or your ESPN is coming in through your cable system or your satellite system, ESPN and NBC don't know who their audience is. They don't know. Their direct customer, notwithstanding what the MTC says, their direct customer is the advertiser and the licensee, not the person sitting in front of their screen. By going to the base bill with the dash three, you're just reverting to audience. There will be litigation about who is a broadcaster, how you divide out all those streams of revenue. So it's and what is the audience? We know in those a number of those pending cases that the LRO report really went through, page 5 of their report. In those audit processes, through those cases, I know from the people who handle them at our companies, they bring in outside third-party Nielsen ratings on what is the audience on the pre-2014 cases. The DOR rejects that and says, we're giving you population. So we can have a beautiful, insightful discussion, illuminating discussion about audience, but at the end of the day, the DOR is going to say population.
I don't know what
kinds of companies are taxed based on a population figure. So we think the dash two, and we did try to come up with a compromise that would yield more revenue for Oregon. Again, recognizing that like every other company that does business in Oregon, now we're going to pay twice because we have the CA, the corporate activity tax as well. And whatever formula is adopted here would in all likelihood obviously apply in the CAT tax. So we added in this minimum or floor amount. Take the commercial domicile and the gross receipts and multiply by 0.4%. That yields more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And the dash two provides an election for platform broadcasting companies that find audience more streamlined and more efficient for them. So I just want to make it really clear that market sourcing, the concept, I understand it, and in theory we support it. It's just that the MTC takes you in a direction that reverts you back to the 1989 statute, which is audience. And that will create the confusion, will create controversy in audit, create disputes, and lead to more of those cases like the 8 that are tracked in the LRO report. And one other thing that was covered in our letter, but I just want to make the point. I know some would say, look to your neighbor to the south, California. If it's good enough for California, it should be good enough for Oregon. And California does use audience, but you have to look at the entirety of the tax picture, both in California and New York. First of all, the companies have millions of square feet of real estate space. In California, sound stages and office buildings. In New York, mostly office buildings. The sound stages are owned by independent companies. So the companies have a very large real estate footprint and pay a lot of taxes through the real estate property tax. And those states also incentivize us. They offer, in California's case, a $330 million a year tax credit, production tax credit, to make movies and TV shows in California. And in New York, their production tax credit is $420 million a year to incentivize that. In addition, their corporate tax form, their corporate tax methodology is also an incentive. Commercial domicile would yield a lot more revenue for New York and California, and they made a decision to keep that big presence, that its audience. So it's really not an apples to apples comparison, Oregon and California. You have to look at the whole of the tax picture and the other, see it as an incentive in California and New York. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yes, thank you. You've been listening to this discussion, and if you go back to 1989, and there was some notion that had Oregon been in market-based then, that there never would have been this move for different treatment for interstate broadcasters. What's your take on that?
Well, I just think it's hard to go back and know, you know, what you would have done or what I would have, you know, what would have happened in 1989. The companies were very different at that time. And I just, it's sort of hard to have that kind of 2020 hindsight. I wouldn't venture a guess. I understand that the idea of market sourcing is to have one system that applies to everybody and treats everybody fairly. But you have to understand, in market sourcing, you take, if you go in that direction, you're taking this industry back to audience. And that has proved not efficient and not certain and leading to a lot of controversies.
If we were to go back to audience or make that change, are there any changes that you would say, okay, if you're going to do this, then at least do this, this, and this? Is there a better way to do audience from your, is it just a non-starter?
Well, again, that's why we think the Dash 2 it makes the most sense, mm-hmm. because it affords an election. And for a company that audience, you know, is more efficient and more streamlined. But for other companies, I can tell you it's not. They have a number of different networks and cable program networks, and everyone, you can imagine that the audience for Nickelodeon is different than the audience for ESPN. And you have to prove that up. And then you have disagreements with, the auditor about what is the audience. So I just think it just leads to a lot of controversy and a lot of potential litigation.
So there's no way that there would be like a less evil way to do audiences, as far as you're concerned?
Well, I'll certainly take it back to, if you're asking for us to consider that, let me take it back and talk to some of the practitioners who handle this issue, and we'll, you know, and I'll provide an answer within 24 hours. So if that's your request to us to see if there's a way to make audience lend some certainty to it and try to avoid the controversies, I'll get back to you.
Okay. Senator Findley.
Thank you, Chair Hess. I'm trying to understand a couple of things. The section in the Dash 2 that says the broadcaster's gross receipts from individual customers plus domestic receipts from advertised license multiplied by 0.4. How did you come up with that number? How is it a comparative analysis between in other states? What and where are you at?
Thank you, Senator. So in working with LRO through the fall on their report, we had some internal deliberations and know that some of the issue here is about the amount of revenue that comes to Oregon. Audiences, it becomes a bigger number. Again, we say there's a lot of dispute till the taxpayer it's resolved and Oregon would get the tax paid. But we know it's, you know, ultimately the GOR calculates it as a bigger number. So was there an amount that we could increase commercial domicile by that would be fair and equitable? So that was the multiplier, 0.4% times the gross receipts from all, you know, throughout the United States. And in other states, you asked other states. So there are 11 states where we have commercial domicile. I think in Wisconsin we have not this formula that we proposed in this Dash 2, but there is it's a little bit of a hybrid. It's a minimum and a maximum, and it's less straightforward than this formula. So I know Wisconsin has a little bit of a hybrid method, and I'm not recalling any other states. I think the rest of them are more or less what we've had here in Oregon for the last 5 years.
Taylor. Thank you, Jess. I'm not sure if you were done.
Fine. Okay.
For the Motion Picture Association, is it a priority to have the same policy among the 50 states?
No. As I described, in New York and California, we have audience. So because that happens to be an incentive there. In other words, it's a lesser tax burden under audience in those states.
So, follow-up?
Follow-up.
So, the Motion Picture Association is okay with there being different policies in different states?
Well, of course, we will follow the law as...
Of course, yes, yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's not a priority. Well, because sometimes we have tax measures that come forward and there's a desire to have consistency among the 50 states, but that doesn't sound like a priority for us.
No, but we have worked in these 11 states in the last 6-7 years to achieve commercial domicile. So, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, may I say something? I've got bite my tongue here. My name's John Powell. I represent the Motion Picture Association. I think it's important to go back to the charts that we started with in this discussion of ABC, NBC, and CBS. Three networks, three broadcasters. They threw their signals up into the air. You put an antenna on your house like I did, 2 miles out of the city limits of this city in 1989. Antenna. There was no cable out there. I put my antenna up, and I grabbed those signals. Some of them not as good as others. And I watched television. Nielsen ratings could pretty much tell us who was watching what. Audience. Audience factor. But you heard the DOR's testimony last week. It doesn't work. That's why they go to population. It doesn't work anymore. I go home, I hit that guide and start scrolling, and there are gazillions of channels on my cable network. And I pay for that. I pay a cable, a portion to Oregon because they know my address. And it's so different than it was. And the only amendment that's going to bring certainty to this issue is the Dash 2s. And that's why we ended up proposing that after going through the report this interim and looking at all these issues. And what this association would like is some certainty, whether it's 0.4 or 0.5. They'll understand how the tax is calculated. It's going to be auditable, and it's going to be something that the Department of Revenue can audit, something that the companies will understand with some certainty. It doesn't take the authority of the legislature away to increase the tax at some point. It simply gives certainty to this tax issue, and it's the only thing. Because again, it's very clear in the examples that DOR has with the rulemaking how this industry would be taxed. And it's going right back to where we were.
Right.
And that's what we just don't find as a solution. We think that's kicking the can just a little bit down the road.
Right. And I know there's an issue about the definition of broadcaster that you think it's too broad or not reflective. I mean, we're happy to work next year on a definition or think about amending that. But the MTC rules, which the DOR has adopted, there's no definition of broadcaster. So I don't, you know, maybe the DOR will pick and choose who's a broadcaster and who audit, you know, who they audit, but if that definition doesn't work, then let's put, you know, that is the definition we use in many other states. But if it doesn't work, let's hone in on why there is a perception that it's too broad. It's not been explained to me why that definition is too broad, and I don't know who else it will ensnare. Other than, you know, the couple of dozen taxpayers that we know are broadcasters. So happy to consider that as well.
Can I take you back before you leave to
sure.
one thing you said earlier, that the audience isn't really a true reflection of who the customers are for ESPN. So what you're saying is it's not as important as like who ultimately is watching this on their computer or TV as much as it's the people who pay ESPN? I mean, I'm not saying that doesn't make sense.
No. It's not. Of course, they all want viewers. Don't get me wrong. All of these networks want to attract viewers all over the country, all over the world. But if you're looking at the business relationship, who do they transact business with? Who do they enter a contract with? It's Nike. It's not you sitting in front of your TV screen, unless you are a Disney Plus subscriber. Then they know it's you, the way Netflix knows that it's you because it's your billing address.
So take Disney, and it's, you know, for lack of a better word, customers. If it's Disney Plus, it's me. But if it's not, who are those customers, and how should we account for them?
Right. So the customers of ESPN are their advertisers and the licensees. So your the cable company that you get ESPN through, that so they that's the transaction. You know, ESPN wants to be carried by Comcast, by Spectrum Cable, by Dish Satellite, AT&T UVerse. So that's the relationship between ESPN and the carrier who carries that signal, that network.
So what you're saying is they're getting paid by those people regardless of whether there even are viewers in Oregon.
Exactly.
Generally, there would be,
right.
but that's where the business is done.
The contract.
And so the audience is kind of almost irrelevant, but it's not the reason there would be audience. So that's why Nike and others are paying.
Right. Everybody wants to have their programming or advertising seen by people, but the architecture of the business model is that ESPN is paid. You know, Nike pays to have their commercials on ESPN, and Comcast pays to carry ESPN on its package of channels, and that's what we think is the taxable transaction. That's where their revenue comes from.
And it could work in reverse, I suppose, if they don't. There's a big audience in Oregon, but their business is bad for Disney. They still show the show. They don't get the money from Nike or whatever. I guess there's a. Or maybe, no, I'm taking this one step too far. Okay. Senator Riley.
So, on that vein, of course. If people in Oregon, if there weren't enough people in Oregon watching ESPN, Comcast wouldn't pay to get ESPN for their local networks.
Theoretically, right. I don't, you know, there's viewers here. I mean, there are people, right.
But, and that's why.
Right.
And that's why Comcast pays, is because there are viewers here.
Well. And the viewers are paying Comcast. That's where the viewers are paying Comcast, not paying ESPN except through Disney Plus now. So I have to always now amend
but,
that.
But,
right.
Comcast,
but they're not paying.
But Comcast pays ESPN.
Yes.
And they wouldn't if there were no viewers here.
Right. If there was a blackout here, yeah, of course. But I. But that's the transaction, and the transaction is not based on the amount of audience here.
Yes, it is. If there were no audience here, they wouldn't buy it.
Well, it's negotiated nationally, but okay.
All right.
It just doesn't lend certainty to the audit process and to the receipts for Oregon. It gives rise to controversy, again, as the LRO has documented in the pending cases, which, again, in spite of moving to market sourcing, it really is reverting to audience and all the controversy that brings.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. The Department of Revenue wish to weigh in or respond, or you're okay?
Madam, or Mr. Chair, sorry. just saw me, Representative Nathanson walk in. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is Deanna Mack with Department of Revenue, and I'm here to answer any questions you may have about our interpretations or anything that has been said. I think Caitlin has done a great job of explaining kind of the history, the issues that we see with this and why market-based sourcing rules probably are better. We see some problems, and I know MPAA doesn't have the same perspective. They're looking at it from their client's point of view, but we see the definitions in the current current broadcaster statutes is bringing in more businesses than probably was intended in 1989 because of technology. Everyone uses technology. Everyone uses computers and pushes signals, social media platforms, that kind of stuff. So their nexus is no longer an issue because of the Oregon case, Capital One, and the national case, Wayfair. So that's not an issue. Whether a business is a broadcaster under the statutes as they're defined is still an issue. Those people will still argue about that. The introduced version and the Dash 3 gets rid of that. So that litigation would be removed. We wouldn't have to look to see the type of business that they are anymore, but we would look to the source of their what their activity is in Oregon. So that isn't that fixes that issue as well. Additionally, when you're talking about, I think Senator Riley asked a great question. All the contracts that we've seen between the broadcasting community and these other entities like Comcast that relay this stuff, it's all based on viewers. They negotiate nationally how much the fee is going to be based on the viewership in the various locations. So we still think that, but for Oregon viewers, no one would be paying for this service. Trying to think what else.
Ask you about that.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but this discussion we just had, though, was about Oregon viewers actually being irrelevant to the business deals that ESPN might make with Nike or Disney right. might make with Samsonite. And that was regardless, irrelevant, whether Oregon viewers would actually watch. The deal was made somewhere else, New York or LA.
Right, that is correct, Mr. Chair. My understanding from the auditors that have seen these contracts, that contracts are negotiated like that, but they're all based on the viewing audience in the
viewing audiences nationally, not specific to Oregon.
Right. So the question then becomes is why would Oregon viewers be watching any less television or viewing commercials than any other American? We represent 1% of the population, plus or minus. What about our habits are different than any other American's habits?
Well, I mean, you could make an argument there. You could say, Oregonians don't watch professional wrestling in the same way that they might watch it in Alabama. Oregonians might watch more women's basketball than people in Wisconsin.
Certainly. And we have, local areas. I lived in Woodburn for years and years. There's a lot of Latino stations in Woodburn that probably the rest of Oregon doesn't spend a lot of time viewing. That information is all in the broadcaster's records. We in folks' records that we don't have access to. So we request that information. And a lot of times, my understanding is, though that information isn't provided. And that's why, as kind of a tool, I guess we end up defaulting back to the method, because there isn't a good reason to justify something more or less, really. So what we end up doing, and I know there's a perception that we just always go to that number, and any time that there's an enforcement, when someone doesn't provide substantiation, the answer is to issue a bill, right, to get them to provide that information. And that's not unique to this industry. That's just how it is. Taxpayers hold all the cards when it comes to providing information. They're supposed to provide it to us, but they don't always. And so when we try to make these kinds of analyses, right, we do our best at it, and there's still appeal rights. There's some taxpayers that come up with different ideas on how they can attribute their income, and we'll consider that information. We can't just take their word for it. We need to have substantiation behind it to show that that is a reasonable basis, and we go with that. So I don't know if you have other questions, but I do think that, I mean, as far as going back to Caitlin, and I think the MPAA both said that for the moving over to market-based sourcing does for that specific industry move back to audience. But for everybody else that we deal with, it provides clean lines of what, based on what their activity is in Oregon, their connection to Oregon, what they're supposed to do here. And it doesn't, we don't have to get into the type of entity that they are and whether NBC is a broadcaster or not, or whether ESPN is a broadcaster or Comcast is a cable provider, or we just don't, they make that determination. It's all spelled out in the market-based sourcing rules, the MTC rules.
Senator Finley?
Thank you, Chair. I have a two-part question.
Okay.
So is the audience numbers a derived number from the population? Because I don't know how else you could come to something like that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Finley, I think that it certainly could be if you chose to do that in statute, but we look to the taxpayers' records to see how those contracts, we look at the contracts to see how they were negotiated. We look at their the viewers, you know, because some of them do use Nielsen ratings. Some of them do still use those means. And so we'll use those if they're provided.
Senator Finley.
You mentioned the other day that some, and my takeaway, and not your words, was kind of a draconian difference in revenue generated between the dash two and the dash three. And I may be overstating it, and I apologize for that. But I think it's critical for us to be able to make a viable decision. Is we need to see the numbers of how you got to that number and the exact estimated revenue of the dash three and the estimated revenue of the dash two.
Mm-hmm. I know, Mr. Chair and Senator Finley, the report that the LRO did was based on the difference between audience and commercial domicile, and it was for a small subset of taxpayers. It didn't represent all taxpayers, and it was only a few of them, I think 60%, that provided information to us to help do that estimate. Again, the taxpayer holds all the information, so we can only ask and hope they provide it, but in this case, they didn't. So that is just a subset, the estimate that they did from going from audience to commercial domicile for that report. As far as going from audience carve-out for everyone to market-based sourcing, I think Caitlin's right. There's some folks that are going to... it's probably a distinction without a difference for some folks, right? Because a lot of these businesses have subscribers, and that's going to get sourced to Oregon, whether it's under market-based sourcing or the way the carve-out is. But I think that there's going to be some guidance provided for this industry as well as other industries. So there's going to be winners and losers. I can see where Caitlin might say that is an indeterminate. But as far as everything we've seen indicates that a shift away from audience down to commercial domicile is a pretty significant decline in tax revenue. But I can't quantify that. That's where we don't have all the information to quantify. I just can tell you from the audits that I've seen, from the records that I have seen, without disclosing who those taxpayers are, they have been pretty substantial reductions year over year.
Did you say earlier that, or did you infer that there would be less litigation or there would be no litigation under the dash three?
Mr. Chair, I don't know that there'll ever be no litigation. We are the taxing authority. People don't really like us much, but I think that there's going to be less litigation because we're not going to be worrying about who's a broadcaster. We don't have to define and litigate that. We don't have to litigate whether all receipts are included. Because the way the statute's written now, if you're a broadcaster by definition, then all your gross receipts are included in your apportionment formula. And I think that there's some belief that doesn't make sense. When you start looking at a company, and I'm going to throw out like someone like YouTube and Google. Does it make sense? Because they own this tiny little piece of YouTube, which is broadcasting videos, right, based on advertisements. Does that make sense that all of what they do is apportioned using an audience? I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. I mean, I shouldn't probably use an actual public analogy there, but that's the kind of struggle that we have when you're looking at these industries, because everyone is using technology now. Do we want to litigate whether these people are broadcasters? Not really. We'd like to just say, okay, what should be fairly and accurately reflected in Oregon? And we don't see a different way than really looking at who's viewing these shows, because without, you know, but for the viewers, people wouldn't be paying for this service in Oregon. That's our belief based on what we've seen in the records.
She said what I would say.
Okay, thank you, Deanna. All right, committee. That brings us to an end, and I will close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1529. We'll take another swing at this later this week. We have the revenue forecast tomorrow. As guests, should you choose to be present here, of the House Revenue Committee, and that's at 8:30, Chris? Revenue forecast at 8:30. Okay? We are adjourned.
And I won't be here because I have a committee.
I won't be here either.